estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 403. I'm Adam, and what's it for? What are you doing? And here's Debbie Melrose.
Find out what happened, Mr. Fibberly, and find out fast, or by all the fires of night, I'll have that skull off you.
Mary Lang.
Failed.
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Well, I just put 1.795372 and 2.204628 together.
Yes. And we're going to be talking about the Reboss operation very shortly, but no, not the Reboss operation. That's what Debbie's going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the Pirate Planet. But at the moment, Debbie Melrose is now going to talk about the Reboss operation. How long shall I give her, everybody?
No, don't give me that long.
Oh, okay. Go on then.
I mean, we've watched this and reviewed this one before, definitely. But yeah, Game of Thrones meets Doctor Who meets, oh dear, the acting.
Game of Thrones? I didn't see any rude things going on in it.
The Game of Thrones isn't just about rude bits.
Is it not? That's not what I've been told.
Kind of missed the point there, I think.
I tried watching Game of Thrones. I couldn't get into it.
Oh, I love Game of Thrones.
And they get into each other enough, apparently.
Fnarf. This was fun. I really loved the rubber-suited monster. I thought that was fantastic. And I just love the way that Romana and the Doctor work together. But you always seem to have, with these two, you always seem to have a stooge with them. If you see what I mean? The one that's going, oh, why is this happening? Oh, why is that happening? And obviously this goes on again into the one we're reviewing this week. And I just like the fact that I'd like to have been sort of left just to them being smart together and just carrying on the romp, because I didn't feel we needed the explanation for half the stuff that they were justifying. And I just thought it was a good fun, good episode, good idea about selling, trying to double cross, triple cross people. And it wasn't the best episode ever, but it was a good opener.
You listened to our show. That's where you got that quote from, didn't you?
What?
You actually listened to the podcast of Once for the Sounds of Things. That's what I said about it.
I do.
Do you? Blimey, that makes a change.
And what is Romana's full name?
Oh, my God.
Oh, good grief. I'm not allowed to say because I got it wrong, apparently.
All right. Good girl.
I got it wrong. I'm going to jump to a little bit of feedback we had ahead of the proper feedback section, because I'm not going to call her Romana. No, what you just said, Deborah.
Romana,
because I got this email from Andrew Kamaltz. The fourth syllabus is Dvor and not Drov. Adam says it incorrectly every time. Gets tiresome listening to him criticise others' pronunciations when he doesn't E. What does the E mean? If I'm missing part of that. When he doesn't E.
Romana Dvor et Trelunda. Okay, fair enough.
So I'm just going to call her Romana from now on.
Oh, what a relief.
I say we call her Fred.
Be quiet.
Yeah, Fred's good.
So that was a little bit of feedback that upset me.
And a bit minded because it wasn't very thorough. I do apologise.
No. I'll have a bit of fun talking about people's pronunciations. I don't care if I get my pronunciations wrong. It's part of the fun I get out of doing the show.
Exactly.
So I had to. I had that when that email come in. That came in on February the 16th, so I've had, that was yesterday, it feels like a lot longer, well, that can't be right.
February the 15th,
2 days. I've had 2 days to...
You're just keeping it down to earth and real, that's all.
I had 2 days to sulk about that email and walk around with a lump in my throat every time I thought about it. I thought, well, 402 episodes, maybe that's enough for the podcast, and maybe I should think about doing other things on a Sunday evening, perhaps, and rather than people being mean to me via email. That's the first bit of trolling I've ever had. Doing this show.
Loads. Don't sweat it.
You've had loads.
I take Mickey out of my accent and what I say all the time because of the podcast.
Do they? Do they? When?
No, I've told you about this before. I get trolled every now and then because I just am out there and that's it. Obviously, I'm a public property and well, people think the accent is false, actually. I got accused of having a false British accent.
Well, I'm very sorry about that, Debbie. that's maybe even sadder. They can't...
Because it was too much like Mary Poppins.
Oh, no, that's upset me as well now, so I'm doubly upset. Right then, so shall we finish the show on 403? Shall we finish your show on 403? But we'll have to do this one, obviously. And
you do keep it up well.
Beg your pardon?
I managed to keep it going for a while, yes. No, Adam, take it a week at a time, Adam. Don't worry.
Don't like people being mean to me.
Wait,
do people not realise this is as what they used to call in the podcasting days of old, free content? We all give us our time up for free for me to spend hours editing a show for free for everybody. Well, it's not really free, is it? Because I actually pay for the feed. I pay for that. Yes, I get a bit of money back from the sponsors, but I pay it. But there you go. Moving on.
Master.
Yes?
Are you truly upset?
Yes. A lot of people have been mean. It's not as if I do the show, making people laugh and stuff, you know. Maybe that person missed the point of me being... faux mean. I was being faux mean to people.
Don't be so upset.
It's part of the comedy of the show, me being faux mean. Don't people watch Blackadder? Although it's actually being mean to Baldrick, to be fair. I'm actually being faux mean. It's a completely different type of meanness. It's a sort of meanness that all of Sheldon's friends are to him on the Big Bang Theory. Anyway, moving on. Right then, we're going to talk about the Pirate Planet. Let's go straight in. Is everybody happy with this, going straight into the Pirate Planet? No? Well, I'm going to do it anyway. I've got the subtitles up. The Star Pirate Planet begins with a bit of a title sequence. And I didn't got past the title sequence! What?
No, continue.
Well, you must know.
I was doing that to be faux funny.
No, it wasn't even faux funny. Anyway, so we then get a little sort of panning shot of a weird looking model. Looks a bit like the Smurf village.
Definitely a model.
Yes, it does look like a Smurf village.
And then a little shot up at the what we obviously know to be the bridge of the ship, which is actually they're very cleverly shot from the angle and stuff like that, and it's got quite a nice little model.
Master?
Yes.
There are three models of the bridge.
Are there?
There's one for long shots, one for slightly closer shots, and one that they blew up at the end.
Okay.
And the one at the end that they were blowing up, it was starting to melt underneath the lights.
Oh, well, it's probably just as well they blew it up then. So then we're on the bridge. We meet the scenery-eating... what's his name again?
Captain,
that's a word. Captain. And his robot parrot.
Yay!
Beg your pardon?
Bruce Purchase, yeah, yay!
He was very good in this. But I suppose there was enough scenery left at the end of the story for him to... You know, I would have thought he would have eaten it all by then. And, of course, Mr. Fibbley! the cringing and fawning sidekick.
He was magnificent.
They were both magnificent. Because we don't see the captain's face initially. You have to go for a few silly seconds of him just talking with the camera allegedly shooting over his shoulder. And then a new age of prosperity is announced as...
they don't seem very enthusiastic, though.
I love the fact they're looking up in the sort of like a courtyard. There's this CCTV camera pointing in the wrong direction. And then one of the people goes a bit funny and becomes almost there and then a Mentiad. A Mentiad's a psychic people, the way Kirby. They can detect the deaths of everybody that the pirate planet kills, basically. Hello? Anybody there?
Yeah, we're listening to you.
We're just listening.
I just wanted to verify it just for my own, comfort. And then looks like we're on the TARDIS, a very dark TARDIS room, with K-9 being fiddled with, the Doctor. Romana, meanwhile, is meanwhile inspecting the manual for a Type 40 TARDIS, She's quite an interesting. I mean, looking at this shot, apart from having Debbie Melrose's eyebrows, she's actually quite a good looking woman, isn't she?
Spike.
My
eyebrows are.
I mean, are.
Somebody's got to have them because they vanished years ago.
And I like her outfit a lot better this week than last week.
Oh, I love it. I'm thinking of cosplaying her this summer.
It was just like the outfit she had in Pirate Planet that she was wearing. Anyway, so yeah, they
stick. And you've got a convention you can go to cosplay.
I don't know if I'm allowed to cosplay though.
We'll talk about that later. Anyway, right. So he sticks the stick in the hole, and then they try to materialize, but something goes a bit funny. The camera goes a bit wibbly wobbly.
It does.
And they find it a little bit difficult to materializing. The TARDIS console wobbles all over the place because they didn't nail it down properly. And the Doctor whacks his face on the console. Revealing a scar that he had in the previous story.
Okay. Well, Master.
Here we go, yes.
And any other time in the TARDIS console room that you now see the scar, it is actually makeup.
Okay. Thank you for
because
that, Kirby.
Because the whole thing occurred in the previous recording.
So why did we go...
And you'll notice at the beginning of this episode, it has healed. So they had
you
to reduce it.
Funny.
So what was the point in doing it?
Because they had done some location shooting where it's very prominent, particularly in the nuclear power plant.
Yeah, they don't record in order anymore.
Okay. Anyway, so...
it's so prominent that they had to come up with a reason, although I don't know why they didn't come up with a reason for it in the previous story. That has never really been explained.
Yeah, well, they're not going to get around to doing that now. Anyway, so the captain was also having trouble materializing over, was it Califrax? The planet that they were consuming on this particular mission?
Yes.
And then so therefore the Doctor and Romana get out of the TARDIS. They're actually not on Califrax. They're actually on the... What is the pirate planet called?
Oh, God.
Is that called God?
No, they do mention it, though, don't they?
Okay,
yeah, it's...
Doesn't matter.
Xanax.
Oh, well done, Kirby. Impressed with that. Anyway, right, so then we have a scene of Prelix having a bit of a sort of meltdown, basically. He's sweating and tossing and turning, and his family are sort of a bit worried that he's not very well. Maybe he needs a doctor, perhaps, but he hasn't turned up yet.
I wonder where he can find one.
Yeah. And then, what's this? The good-looking, dashing chap called? I can't remember his blooming name now. With the red coat and the sort of Beatles hairdo. What's his name?
Kimmis?
Is it?
Was it Kimmis or Balaton?
It's Prelix.
Prelix is the one that's having the mental
the
breakdown.
Who's tossing back and
forth. Is it Balaton or...
Oh, Kimmis.
No, Balaton
Kimmis.
Is the old guy.
Kimmis then, yeah. Right, I'm very good with names, as people of long listeners to the show will know. So the Mentiads are watching Prelix because he's transforming into a Mentiad, and they want him. Right? Well, they want to get him in their little club. The Doctor, meanwhile, has a very funny scene, almost like it could have been written by Douglas Adams, funny enough, in which he's trying to ask passers-by what's going on, and they all ignore him.
Yes.
And Romana just sort of steps in and asks just the one person, and the reason being that she's pretty and he isn't, which I thought was quite amusing.
I think the captain should have been wearing resplendent jeweled battle shorts throughout as well.
You do?
Yes, that's... Douglas Adams thing from Hitchhikers.
Okay. Yes.
Sorry, so Romana sort of befriends
there's lots of Hitchhikers.
Uh-huh.
Romana befriends a passerby.
And when he does them wrong, when
yes.
the doctor says them, and they're not quite Hitchhikers quotes, it bothers me.
Oh,
bothers
dear.
Me.
Oh, well, never mind.
The electron in the linear accelerator. It's I'll never be...
Be quiet! So,
well,
like I say...
Douglas Adams had not written Hitchhikers yet.
Yes, he has.
He has. Be quiet! Anyway, right, sorry.
Not before this.
Anyway, so the Romana offers the passerby a jelly baby, which she consumes, and then starts looking up at the sky with a telescope. I don't think she would have seen much, bear in mind it's daylight at this point, but nevertheless she does. And they start sussing out that things aren't quite what they should be, especially the fact the little rod is giving off signals all over the place. And then, of course, the Mentiads make their move across the land and sea or whatever to try and capture Prelix. And then Romana gets arrested. And then the doctor arrives because he needed a doctor to see if Prelix is, you know, ill or something like that. I don't know how he ended up in that situation, but nevertheless he did. And hang on, my thing stopped. I can't move it. Bear with me. My slider. And then I think the Mentiads turn up and zap the doctor, and he recovers quickly from the first zapping and then slides down the wall.
Yeah.
It wasn't more so much of a zap than a bit of a dirty look. I often get that when I upset She Who Must Be Obeyed, and I feel like I should be dropping back against the wall and sliding down the wall. It's a similar sort of, just a sort of the look of death, isn't it, really, which is quite, always makes me laugh. That's why I probably don't slide down the wall. I just end up laughing, and I'll probably end up being physically killed rather than the kill of the look of death.
Yeah. Master?
I haven't even got halfway through the title sequence this time. Yes?
Well, I was before the doctor gets zapped by the Mentiads.
Yes.
When you've got that scene of the soldiers, the guards, shooting the Mentiads, and they're not falling down, there's an extra on the DVD, which is amusing. It's just basically no sound effects, no special effects of a lot of the location shooting, including that scene from some other angles, and one of the Mentiads slides in the mud and recovers.
Yeah, I did notice some of the Mentiad costumes were slightly different to others. Some had sashes and some didn't. I did think, well, maybe some of the actors forgot their sashes for certain scenes. Oh, God.
The Mentiads costumes are, if you look closely, they're worn out versions of the same styles as the regular population, which is deliberate.
Okay, good. I forgot what I was going to say now. What were we talking about before you interrupted me on that particular one? I was going to say something. We're talking about the extras on the DVD,
yes.
Which reminded me that we downloaded the downloadable thing off Sky of Bohemian Rhapsody, which comes with lots of very interesting extras, which I'm quite looking forward to looking to. Just thought I'd say that because I love that film. It's really good. Right then.
Good movie.
It is. Right. So next episode, the doctor's all right. You know, he gets knocked out, but he's okay. But the captain's moaning like... but they do start mining, shall we say, Califrax. But it doesn't take them long to actually completely reap the planet of its, its wealth. And then, hang on, I think Romana, Romana is transported to the captain.
In a flying speedboat. Yes.
Another way... quizzing the driver all the way. I love that. Telling him about what she's done and what she's driven and things.
I do like Romana. I do like this version of Romana quite a lot. I think she's very
she's brilliant.
Very tongue-in-cheek.
I've only met her once before, so yeah, this is terrific.
She's just very funny and...
I had one given to me as a gift for my 70th birthday.
And she plays it just the right way it should be played, in the sort of... Mm-hmm. Sort of not realizing she's funny sort of way. Anyway, so I love the scene where the doctor, he's trying to get hold of a speedboat, so he bites a jelly baby and throws the rest of the packet onto the speedboat as if it was a hand grenade. And one of them just happens to roll out and off, and it's not actually a jelly baby that rolls off, it's a licorice all sort, but we'll let that pass.
They're all sorts. He pulls the one scene, he pulls out a jelly baby, and they're jelly babies, and then when he throws them, they're all sorts.
Yeah, and they're all over the floor. Which confuses the guard, who, then gets overcome by by them and they nick the speedboat. I'm just going to gloss past the conversations that the captain brilliantly has with Fibley and his little nurse, who isn't obviously his anxia, but at this point we thought he was his nurse. And then Romana arrives. And I think they wanted her because they knew that there was another ship that was trying to materialise in the same space as they were. And they basically want the TARDIS. So that, and they know that she can fly, or at least they think that she can. I think she can. I'm not quite sure. Anyway,
they want her to help fix the engine, which got damaged because the TARDIS was there at the same time.
And they know that she has, because she has a ship that can do the same sort of thing that she...
Correct, the Moondow.
Thank you, Kirby. So, yeah, the Doctor and... I've forgotten his name. Anyway, they fly to the Brigitte sort of area. The Doctor sort of manages to manipulate his way into the building, or the bridge area, well, the engineering area to be precise. While Romana sort of, I think she pretends to help, or does she actually help? I think she does. It's a bit difficult to work out.
She looks at the piece of machinery and she identifies it and says it can be fixed, but she knows she can't do it.
Ah, she needs a doctor. That's right. And the doctor, quite convenient, has turned up at this point and uses that really clever corridor thing, you know, which I really love, especially for the joke it leads into in episode 4. It's quite cleverly shot as well.
So when are you going to visit Wales sometime and visit that railway tunnel?
Been to Wales, dear. I'm not going to go again for a while. I thought you said you listen to this show sometimes, Kirby. You must have listened to the episode when we went to Wales and you went to...
Yes. If I were going to Wales, I'd find these disused railway tunnels.
Would
just
you?
So I can say I was on Zanac.
So, hang on, the dog wants to come in.
Oh, they're both coming in. Ooh, my goodness. Wow.
Puppy!
Oh, dear. I don't know. There's something wrong with Star. I tripped over her last week, and she's... one of her eyes has gone white. Which is really funny.
Because you tripped over her?
Well, no, I didn't see her. She more or less caught a full blast into my shin, and it sort of knocked her eye, and it had been shut for a week. And when it's opened, it's all white, so I don't know.
Oh,
stop!
So
I think she may be blind in that eye now, and she's got this horrible thing on the side of her head. I don't know if it's connected with that same side, but she's had for a while. We thought it was a wart. Deb thinks it might be cancer.
We're going to the vets.
For goodness sake, we're going to the vets on Tuesday. So be quiet trying to nag me about the start. And then she's leaving the room now. I think she knows how to spell cancer. Oh, they're both. Are you staying in
vet.
The magic?
The word vet,
yeah. Oh, yeah, it's your fault. Right, magic's in, Star's out. Right, back to the episode. Right, so then we see this sort of scenes in which it's supposed to be the engineering part of the ship, and the Doctor sort of fiddling around with everything and then gets caught red-handed by the captain.
It's another nuclear power station.
Yeah.
It's a different one, though.
And they all... hang on, there's a scene. Then they all leave. The Doctor and Romana leave with a couple of guards. So what's their mission there? I've forgotten this bit. The Doctor, Romana, a couple of guards leave the bridge area via this sort of tunnely inertia thingy. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
And then they get ambushed. And then they go back in again. And then they're in some caves. You know what? These caves are in Wales. They do look very much like Welsh caves.
Yes, the caves are definitely in Wales. They're the National Show Caves.
And then the Mentians turn up.
You should go.
No, I shouldn't. Then the Mentians turned up.
In particular, this one's Cathedral Cave.
Be quiet. That's the way they make cheese there, Cathedral City. Can I speak? Right, yeah. And then the Mentians...
Cheese, Grummet.
Right. That's all 3 points you just earned.
We're not
deducted.
The same without him, you know that, Adam.
And then, like I say, the Mentios turn up and glare at the Doctor again, implying that they're going to kill him. Alright, so that's the end of episode 2. Episode 3.
I must say, this story did seem to take off with episode 3 and 4.
Did it? Episode 3, I'm not going to talk about a certain part of the episode, because every time I do, he interrupts me. But, well, funny thing is, when the bloke gets the light sort of shined on his face when he said he wants a doctor or whatever, the doctor does a really sort of, gives him back a dirty look. And then that blonde bird, who's a friend of that bloke with the red smock, gets all friendly with K-9. And...
Is that his sister? That's his sister, not his friend.
Sorry. I should have known this, shouldn't I?
Yeah, that's Prelix's sister, but it's Kimis's missus, isn't it?
That's who I meant, yeah. Kimis's girlfriend. What did you say it was? So I was right. Point deducted for Mary for trying to make out what was wrong when I was right.
What?
And, right, where do we get up to? Right, so I lost. Oh, yeah, and then Prelix is fully menti added now. And... Fibbily has been given all sorts of hard treatment by the captain. But we'll say about Fibbily, he obviously loves his work, even though he's more or less getting bullied by the captain all the time.
Master.
He doesn't like it when it comes to killing billions of people. Well, he has a little bit.
Yes, I noticed this.
There's a conscious moment about that, but that's about it.
Yes.
Master, Kirby. In the backstory, which got removed because of... during the editing process, not the editing of the video, but trying to...
Are you trying to imply they had a bit of a homosexual relationship there, Kirby?
No.
Oh.
No. Mr. Fibuli's grandfather was the first mate on the ship that crashed into the planet that the captain was part of.
Oh, okay.
Captain of. And see, the captain was almost killed, but... Xanthia was put him back together and created his cybernetic parts.
Thank you for that, Kirby. Well explained. Right then, sorry, I'm moving on. No. the Doctor is starting to fathom what... I think I should actually really fathom what's going on, but I don't really... He really understands the full magnitude of what's been going on. Until he sees the little planets in, little containers
right.
or whatever.
He understands part of it. But...
So, they try and escape in a speedboat, and there's a funny scene where they've got K-9 in the boat, and he's sort of operating the controller with his little suction pad. And it's quite an amusing scene. And then they're all sort of chained up and interrogated by the captain. And I do like his robot parrot. I think it's quite amusing. Especially when it flies up and uses its pointy bit to sort of stab people. So the Doctor is then taken on a tour of what is essentially a museum of shrunk planets. And that allows the captain to talk about how brilliant the engineering is around it. And then we get to that brilliant scene. What?
Seems like I saw a similar story fairly recently.
Yes, indeed. You did indeed, Kirby, yes. And... yeah, and then, of course, the Doctor does that brilliant scene, one of my favourite scenes ever in Doctor Who, which he says, what's it for? You know, why just kill all these people just for a little bit of stone, you know, which is good. And then, of course, they escape, even though the keys are dropped on the floor, they escape, and meet the real Xanthia, who's suspended in sort of her last few seconds of life, and just to keep the sort of... sort of image of the younger Xanthia alive. Apparently it won't take long. She's nearly got corpuscle. Is it corpuscle life? Or I can't remember what they called it now.
Corporeal
life. Well done, Debbie. Oh, missed the bell. You don't get that point because I missed the button.
Never mind.
Yes.
Vi Delmar, who played Queen Xanthia, the old one, had to be paid extra because they wanted her to remove her false teeth.
All right. Okay. I don't blame her for that. And I do get rather fed up with these close-in camera angles where the Doctor and whoever is talking to K-9 has to crouch down. Now, I've got Alexa up here. Oh, she's here and she's going to talk now. But I don't have to crouch down to speak to her if I put her on the floor. Well, though she just occasionally, if you're on the other
side. She doesn't look like a dog.
If you're on the other side of the room, she can't hear you very well. And when Deb talks to her, she often doesn't understand what Deb's saying until Deb gets annoyed. about the fact that she doesn't understand what she's saying. When she's annoyed, she speaks a bit more clearly, and then Alexa does understand. I partly think that Alexa's actually programmed to wind up Deb. And I find that quite amusing. They're often arguing with each other. And the funny part of the argument is that Deb's getting irate and Alexa carries on to talking in that really calm sort of monotonic voice. All right, so moving on. Well,
what it boils down to is it makes a better camera shot to have them get down and talk to K-9. And it also gives K-9 a bit more of a doggy feel when you get right down to it.
Oh, I know.
If he's talking to him from standing up or a little ways away, it not only makes a like a boring camera shot, but then
I agree. But it's just that every time there's a conversation between the Doctor and K-9, he crouches down. I just think occasionally he could talk to him stood up with on a wider angle. I just get a bit bored of it. Anyway, towards the end of episode 3, obviously we had to have the walk in the plank scene, which
it's a wonderful. cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It's almost a true cliffhanger. A
literal cliffhanger.
And I do love that.
You know, you see the Doctor picking up that projector thing when he's leaving, visiting the old Xanthia, and it's like, what was that, just sitting there? You don't know where that came from, that he just picked it up and now he's got it.
The other thing I like about that scene is the tubes, the red, blue, white and yellow tubes that remind me of a certain, I don't know where it is, but it's like a quiz set from something or other. But and this is the scene.
You scream, but
it's these laughs. Those laughs that made me chuckle a little bit myself. episode 4, basically it's a projection. The Doctor falling off the plank is a projection, because the Doctor's worked out how Xanthia is projected. But she tries to switch her off, but of course she's nearly corporeal, was it again, sorry?
Corporeal,
yes. She is unable to be switched off. So the Mentiads have turned up at the entrance to the bridge again, and there's a little battle going on between them and some guards.
Master?
Yes.
Some really clever little thing that you may not notice.
Yeah.
But with the guns, when the gun misses, you see a circle, and when the gun hits, you see a diamond.
Well, I hadn't noticed that. Well done, Kirby. Don't get a point for it, but well done anyway. And then, of course, I love the bit where Romana steps out with a gun and knocks out with I suppose she kills him, murders the innocent guard.
Yeah, she just looks a little bit bothered by doing that as well, doesn't she? But the Mentiats had all just stood around trying to open a door, and she's the only one doing any action.
So at this point, now Xanthia's starting to say lots and lots of words where she'd been very quiet for the most of the story, and the captain has changed sides. He's now decided that he doesn't like killing millions of people anymore, and he's being totally controlled by Xanthia, and it becomes he's been quite bad all the way through the story, and suddenly he's turned. He's been a bit like the Master would do when the Master realizes that he's pushed things a little bit too far, and then teams up with the Doctor, and they put things right just before he escapes. Right, so K-9's in there with them, and the Nementiads start losing their powers so once again there's the Doctor and Romana escape. It's just that brilliant scene where they get chased by the guards, and the Doctor, it is that one, yeah, they get chased by the guards, and the Doctor fiddles with the inertia settings, and they go flying into the wall, which is again one of my favourite scenes of Doctor Who ever.
yes.
Never got bored of watching that one.
Yeah.
So much so, I'm going to play it.
Get off now.
Come on, Doctor.
No. Wait a minute. The inertia neutralizer. You know, I think the conservation of momentum is a very important law in physics, don't you?
Yes.
I don't think anyone should tamper with it, do you?
No.
No, not at all.
And also the way that the test set wobbles as they hit it. So funny. Genius. Well, I know you lot didn't like it.
Lots of wobbling sets these couple of years here for some reason.
Yes. So they go back to the TARDIS because the Doctor has a mind to interfere with the next jump. And guess where the next jump is going to be?
Saw 3!
Yes. So they go to the TARDIS, to which could end up destroying the TARDIS, but the Doctor doesn't want Earth taken and killed, does he? And then he did tell, I forgot to mention this, he did tell Prelix to concentrate on his mind so he could communicate him to with him while in the TARDIS. And he basically, all the power they've got is they could just about lift up a spanner.
Yeah, the Mentiacs don't seem to be able to do much for having
not at this stage.
Powerful mind.
Yeah. And he gets Prelix and his friends to lift up a spanner and throw it in the works.
Yeah, and then throw the bit when they blow up at the end. I mean, why didn't someone just touch it rather than about 10 of them stand and look at it until the time?
What do I do, Doctor? Hit it!
It's all about comedy.
So then there's a big explosion, and you initially think that the captain and Xantia are dead, but they've just knocked out for a few seconds. The Doctor and Romana having a bit of a nap as well. And so they materialise back on the bridge and walk past Xantia, and then poor old Fibbley. Fibbley's dead, and that's upset Fibbley. The captain. And he promises to avenge, but doesn't get the chance.
I will avenge you!
Yes. The Doctor is trying to work out how the Bliminette they're going to... obviously, they've worked out the Calufrax is the segment of the Key to Time, but how they're going to get it, because it's been condensed into this tiny thing. And but he comes up with a really clever idea, an idea that does in fact impress Romana. But before that, he zaps Xantia, so he kills Xantia. There's a couple of bits of killing the Doctor does in this story, but I've forgotten what they are. And then with you, well,
we actually see it converted to the second segment.
We do. Beg your pardon?
We never actually see the conversion of the planet.
If you want to make a complaint, I think it's complaints@bbc.co.uk.
we never see him actually pick up that planet either from the time vortex. So.
Yeah, that doesn't matter, does it?
It's going to happen.
They've got it. They're going on to the next piece.
So he does something very clever, and we see a funny graphic of it on the screen. It just rather looks like that thing that you do with fat and detergent. That, you know, it spits the detergent away from the fat thing. But I may be wrong. And then, of course, they got to blow up the bridge. So they create a very sort of crude sort of dynamite setup. And allow the Mentiacs to use their incredible mind powers to sink the plunger down. And boom, there goes the bridge. And off they go, end of the Pirate Planet, which is brilliant. So I've said this on countless occasions. This is brilliant. I don't have to sit here talking about stuff I've already talked about before in the same sort of way. It's brilliant. Guess what about Pirate Planet, everybody? It's brilliant. It's one of my, if not my, favourite classic, if not of all time, Doctor Who story. And if I haven't said it before, it's brilliant. What a story that is. It's just funny, entertaining, brilliant. Okay? So if anybody says otherwise, I'm just going to get my spreadsheet up and running. So.
So we're not allowed to have a difference of opinion.
Well, it better be a valid difference of opinion. And I will tell you
section of this.
And I'd better be allowed to interject. But before you lot speak, I'm just going to check the I've got a cramp in my toe. What they've been saying. No one said anything on the YouTube feed. Well, thank you everybody who is. Thank you for not even saying good evening.
People are busy.
They're not. They're watching. There's at least four people watching. Yeah. Nobody said a thing to me today. So people being mean to me, saying about my pronunciations of Romana, blah 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 blah, and now they're not even speaking to me.
Fred.
It's not Fred, it's Roman Dorvat Nalunda or something like that. You'll probably get told off for saying that wrong now. right, so no one's saying hello or anything, so thank you, and I hope you had a nice Valentine's Day. Back to what we're going to say then. See, it's brilliant to see what Mrs. Mel... No, hang on. What Kirby thinks of it.
By the way, I see chat. I just clicked onto the YouTube, and you've got Lillian, Ian, and Alan T. Butcher have been commenting. So what are you talking about?
I haven't seen anything come up. Nothing's coming up.
Move the chat. It's off to the right.
It's up. I can see that. It says top chat. It's blank.
Yeah.
So shut your face.
Well, Lillian says hi.
Hi.
Alan T. Butcher says Kirby puts an American accent despite being from cows, but that's fine. Ian says, hello, I forgot. Sad face. Lillian says, go to the vet. And Lillian says, it is brilliant.
Right, I've now clicked on the live chat.
And Alan says, oh, yes, we have.
I can see them now. Yeah, Lillian says, hi. Alan T. Butcher's Kirby puts on American accent despite being from cat. It's my job to say it all. Thank you very much. Ian Cook says, hello, I forgot. Lillian Robin said, go to the vet. I don't need to go to the vet. I do need to go to the doctor, actually, about my shoulder, because I'm waiting for my x-ray results. But trying to get in touch with the doctor to get the x-ray results is an absolute nightmare. They've got a phone line you actually never get through on, and I think it's a joke.
Harder to get a dentist these days as well.
Mm, and then Lillian Robin says, it is brilliant. And Alan T. Butcher said, oh, yes, we have. Right then, so we were waiting for Kirby to say what he thought of the Pirate Planet. Kirby.
Well, you know what?
What?
I also say it's brilliant.
Yes, because it is, Kirby.
It is. It's one of the best stories of all.
It is indeed, Kirby.
One of my all-time favorites.
Well, I wouldn't quite go that far.
No.
And I, it's one that I can watch over and over and over again. I was so glad to go back and rewatch it after having watched it, 3 weeks ago with Fred. And you know where I get the name Fred for her.
I know exactly where you got the name Fred for her, because I told you about that a couple of weeks ago. And if you're denying that I'm right, there could be an issue. Beg your pardon?
We had that discussion a couple of weeks ago. Yes. Anyway.
Did you check?
No.
No. So, like I said,
I believe you.
Yes, I know. I remember it quite clearly. In fact, I put that clip on the audio book of the first 300 episodes.
Yes, I think so, yes. Mm. But yes, the Pirate Planet is just magnificent.
Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, what else can I say?
I could say quite a lot, but okay, that's fine. Okay, we're going on then, Mrs.
I know what I could say.
Oh, shut all up. Right. No, you said enough.
I could say, let's see. By the horns of the prophet Balag, speak. No, by the sky demon, say no.
Oh, shut up.
By the beard of the sky demon.
Shut up. Or as Windsor Davis would say, shut up.
I compiled a collection of all the captain's oaths.
Yeah, all right, shut up. Debbie, what did you think of it?
And they pretty much neatly segues into what I didn't like so much about this episode was the amount of weird insults coming out of the captain.
They were brilliant.
It is a tale of two stories almost. This story. You've got the blustering first half, and then the blistering second half. The last two episodes were brilliant. They just kept going.
Yeah, you got that bit right. Plot.
It's like almost as though everything from the first two didn't really matter that much, because here comes the plot. Here comes lots more story. Here comes lots more information. And I've watched this twice, and I still feel exactly the same about it. The first two episodes, it's trying too hard to be one thing or another. It's trying to be funny.
Which it succeeds in.
It is.
That's it.
Off. No, I'm sorry.
Did you say something off?
I love Douglas Adams. I've got all his books. I love almost everything he's done. And the second half of this story was brilliant, but the first half wasn't. So it's not going to be one of my all-time favorites. I felt it took too long to get going, but once it got going, it was fantastic. So it was a bit of a odd one to really try and think about how I'd talk about, because the last two episodes, brilliant. The first two episodes, I'm not sure I'm going to enjoy this story very much. And then suddenly, bang. And I watched two episodes and then left it for a couple of days and then watched the second two. And then I did it again, thinking maybe it's because I watched two. And then I watched one. And I felt exactly the same. And I don't know if Mary will agree with me, but I just don't. I understand so many people think this is amazing.
That's because it is.
to me, only the last two episodes out of the four were amazing.
I enjoyed them. They were proper good
quality Doctor Who. Romana definitely is up there as a good, as a fantastic companion. And I thought it was great. And then the captain suddenly became more of a blustering idiot. He became a lot deeper character, more complex. And then suddenly Nursey was talking, and and this whole story suddenly arrived just in the last two episodes. It was like, you could have extended this. We could have gone a bit more in depth into behind the captain and into Xanthi. I just feel like I was a bit let down by the fact that they had four episodes to do it in, and they just shot it all into the second two.
Kirby, what do you think of Debbie's thoughts on Pirate Planet?
I'm not sure if she saw the same story I did.
This is why we're all allowed to have a difference of opinion.
But you're not allowed to be wrong, Debbie. Right then.
Debbie?
What?
Have you seen... Was this your first time seeing this?
Yes, and I've watched it twice now.
Oh, is that it? Okay, can I move on?
I've seen it. Good grief, how many times have I seen this? Probably dozens.
It's not a competition. Well, it will be a competition later, but that's not the name of the competition. Right, sorry about this, Mary.
Well, I not only agree with Deb, but I'm going to take it further. Now, my information is that Douglas Adams had not yet fully written Hitchhiker's Guide when he wrote this, although he had submitted several ideas for stories for Doctor Who. This is the first one he actually got to write, and he'd never written a full script before. And I think it shows, because this story looks like a bunch of comedy set pieces tied together with little moments of actual drama and info dumps. But the focus is all on the comedy set pieces. I think Romana, as much as I like her, she became the info dump person, because whenever something needed to be explained, it was always dumped on her to do. And although we spend a lot of time, with Douglas Adams's love of making fun of phrases like spanner in the works, or sci-fi, usual problems like guards who can't shoot straight. He just spends a lot and setting up jokes like he did with those guards slamming into the wall. I mean, that was just like a big setup that took up a lot of story. So there we were with these comedy characters. We had sets that were in bright primary colors and quite often, looking cheap. We said it looked like a Smurf set and all that. Like I said, it's all set up for comedy, but the real meat of the story, the real horror of the story, doesn't really hit us until they talk about how they're going to go after Tara. There was something else that I wrote down that I wanted to... the resolution. You know how we always complain that resolutions are so disappointing? We go through three episodes of a story and the resolution happens like in the last two or three minutes. It's like, oh, well, it resolved so quickly that was kind of disappointing. Well, we can't complain about that in this, because that was one of his things, too, was that he wanted to make a resolution that, was very complex. And he certainly gave us that. It took almost half of the last episode to set up and then carry out the final resolution. And we never even really saw the total end to it. So, so that's another poke that he made at how resolutions in adventure stories are a little too brief. This is my third watching of it. The last time I watched it was when we watched it as a podcast. Was it 5 years ago? And I don't remember what I thought of it then. But this time through, I did enjoy the comedy. I did enjoy the acting. But I felt like any time there was any real meat to the story, it was always people just talking about what happened, what's going on, and very little actual things going on. If you know what I mean. So I'm on the fence. It's not my favorite. I enjoyed it, but it's not my favorite. Of course, and I'm not a Douglas Adams fan either.
Ooh,
so.
Don't say that in front of Kirby.
There you are.
Well, Lillian Robbins says, I disagree with Debbie. So, Lillian, you're going to get one of these.
Fair enough. Well, everyone is
really going to disagree with me, too.
Yeah, well, she'll probably post that in a minute. Okay, right, we did get some stuff coming through on the request from Mr. Bartlett Sloan. Mark Sharp, one of my all-time worst stories.
Yay!
So Mark will be absolutely delighted. Shut up, Debbie. We'll be absolutely delighted to get one of these. what else we got here? Richard Maddox, I love this one. The fight between K9 and the bird is so ridiculous, but fun to watch. Next one of these. Benjamin Francis Elliott, the first Doctor Who I watched was a bit of this story. I didn't know what it was then. Years later, I'd start watching Doctor Who, and years after that, I recognised the scene. I like the story too. Gets one of these. Chris Miller.
I see. Everybody just tagged who agrees Scott with you gets a ding.
Chris Miller just tagged Scott Coutier in it. Then Laurie Nix did a pirate emoji catty thing.
Arr.
And then another pirate Lego emoji. And then Chris Miller said, Laurie Nix, arr. Arr. And then we see some more emojis of various piratey things. Jeff Waddle says, I cannot stand this one. So he gets one of these. But he might have been talking about the emojis. Mark Sharp said, it's god-awful. I can't see why people like it. Well, we like it because it's really good and good fun. Jeff Waddle then said, but it's Douglas Adams. I think that's why I don't like it. Mark, don't say that in front of Kirby, Jeff. Mark Sharp, I think that's why it's overrated, to be honest. I didn't have any connection with Douglas Adams. I just liked the story. I'm not saying I really like Hitchhikers, because I've watched it twice, I think, in my life, and I can't remember much about it apart from Peter Davison being a pig.
And that's not really that's Hitchhikers, but no, Hitchhikers is the radio show.
Yeah, whatever. And then Kirby Bartlett Sloan goes on about a load of stuff.
That I've completely memorized.
Beg your pardon?
The radio show that I've completely memorized and can quote from anything in it.
So are you going to go through the stuff you were droning on about on that particular feed?
No.
Okay.
No. I just posted all of the captain's.
And that's another thing I love about this story. All the various put me downs. I do like it when a character has this put me downs, but sort of just diverses it a little bit all the way through. It does happen a couple of times in Doctor Who. So there you go. That's see what we got on the email front. Okay. Good. Let's see if we can.
Oh, it, Master.
Oh God, yes.
Since Ian said over on the YouTube that he forgot about this,
yes.
Did he send something in, or could you dig up his one from however many years ago?
Give us a chance. I've got quite a lot to do doing this show, you know. Grief.
Was a good chortle.
Yeah, he obviously enjoys it. Right then, what's your name again? Maybe Delrose, isn't it?
No, it isn't. I'm not on Facebook Messenger anymore. I've gone.
Oh dear, what a shame, because have now got the thing I've been looking forward to for quite a long time. Debbie Melrose is now going to dictate Alan T. Butcher's email.
No, yeah. I don't even get a quick look. Oh, well, it's going to be even worse than usual. There we go. Pirates of the Zanarkian, or that nurse is telling a fibulae. Dear 20 megabiters, the pirate planet is, of course, a closely studied and coruscating critique of Doctor Who's favourite bugbear, expansionist colonialism. Colonialism. It promotes a new and particularly uncompromising representation of literally crushing, exploiting callously and exhausting utterly the appropriated worlds. The declaration of new golden ages of prosperity reflect the jingoistic and triumphalist manner that such imperialist regimes maintain the centre of their empire, and the development of the Mentiad movement indicates the sort of resistance that can arise due to knowledge of the cruel ruthlessness that is relied upon. The Mentiads are therefore persecuted and demonized to the proletariat by the state, despite their obvious benignity, just as many conscience-based resistance movements have been declared seditious in real-world analogues. The clouding of the real centre of power to keep it safe from attack is also a point objected to here, with the brash captain providing cover for the Queen, who needs this diversion to ensure her delicately balanced power is unchallenged, therefore cannot be brought down. The Doctor uncovers the deceit and fragility of this setup, allowing the virtuous Mentiad forces of enlightenment to end the Inquisitious regime. It should be noted that whilst this story is perhaps pretty outlandishly over the top, it could have been much more so had Douglas Adams' initial storyline not been drastically simplified by the script editor Anthony Reed. Kirby can probably give you details. We also learn that the bloke from the Onoden line survived the transition from 19th century maritime world to the spacefaring piratical one after taking lessons in competence from a chap called Packer and changing his name to Mr. Fibuli. All in all, The Pirate Planet is a fun story of the sort that might get a little wearing if it went this far over the top too often. I agree. As it is, Douglas Adams' style, which often feels a little out of place in Doctor Who, has one of his big hits here. Romana Votralunda's mocking without mocking back to give full rein in a very lively script for both TARDIS crew and key supporting cast. It is also outstanding to see a cliffhanger taken a step further beyond hanging for once. This serial is perhaps 4 minutes too short, as there would be advantages to have the captain explain what it was for. Next up, Doctor Who and the Quiet Cousins of Eldrad, or Intravenous Ogre, stoned again. These are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you for that, Alan. I've been looking forward to that, and it worked very, very well, apart from just mentioning the Romana extended version of the name just the one. Lillian Robin says, Adams has written the pilot episode of Hitchhikers, and was writing the rest as he was writing this, thus the smaller lines.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I love Lillian. Don't we all love Lillian?
Always.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Is she trying to out-pedant me?
And so she should. So I bet you couldn't be pedantic with wearing a pair of stockings. Although I have to admit that I do prefer the pictures she posts without them. Sorry, Mary and Debbie. Yes. I'm a fan of Lillian's legs, and that's all I've got to say. Lillian's legs.
Lillian's legs. Polish
you like polishing her legs? Sorry, what did you say?
What?
No, the nail polish that she's got.
Oh, the nail polish.
That's nice.
It smells nice.
God's sake.
Okay. Each to their own. I used to like the smell of nail varnish when I was a child, and I found that it was
I hate it. I like the colour she's wearing.
It was called solvent sniffing or something like that, and we advise not to sniff it. That's nail varnish, not feet. God, what I thought. Right then, where do we get up to? So Debbie Melrose then dictated that. Kirby requested a bit of feedback back from 2013, so that will require this.
Hello, 20 Megawatt Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Yay!
Is the internet working in the USA with the government shutdown?
Oh, topical.
Last week I mentioned Time Crash, but I was wrong. I meant Time Flight. I've recently watched Russell T. Davies' first TV work, Dark Season. This was a short-lived children's series, only two stories, about a schoolgirl detective. She always carried a canoe paddle in her backpack. Reminds me of someone who always carried a baseball bat. A guest star in the first story is Cyril Shapps, playing his usual nervous foreigner. The baddie in the other story was Jacqueline Pierce. It was about Nazis excavating a tomb to find a weapon. Davies. The Pirate Planet by Douglas Adams. Adams?
Yes.
The Polyphase avatar reminds me of the newly released Scream of the Shulker, which is Flash animated. You think that Tom Baker looks like a curly wig on a sheep? Bardis. There were 42 extras used in this story. Probably just a coincidence. This was made in 1978, so the theme of a woman ruling over a totalitarian state obsessed with material wealth is another coincidence. She was leader of the opposition in those days.
Yes.
The Mentiads wear hoodies. The captain yells a lot and is killed on the bridge. Yelvis has left the building. In war stories, soldiers often pull out the pin of a hand grenade with their teeth before throwing it. The Doctor satirises this by biting a jelly baby before throwing a bag of sweets. The idea of precisely aligned planets as a power source was reused in The Stolen Earth. Davies.
Ah.
Doctor Who is not always filmed in a quarry. Sometimes they use a cave. I'm not sure you can live on a hollow planet. There was some babble about exploding the stolen planets inside Zanag, which I could not make sense of, but it did not seem like a good idea. Having an entire planet as a segment of The Key to Time seems to show they were not taking the idea all that seriously. It was very convenient that the captain had shrunk it. Bardis. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian, from 5 years, oh, 6 years ago even, for that particular feedback.
Crikey.
Yes, it was quite... did you do it? I've done it again. I'm just having a look back through... We did get something from Dr. Phil a while back, but I'm inclined to not play it, because I suppose it's quite long.
So what? Well,
you want to hear it, do you?
It's always nice to hear other people's opinions.
It's a mixture of Two Doctors and Pirate Planet.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's up to you.
That means no then. If you want to listen to that particular bit of feedback from Dr. Phil, you have to go back to September 2013 and find whatever episode was out at that time. That's when we probably did the Two Doctors and Pirate Planet.
Do you want me to look up what we're
no,
doing?
No, shut up, no. Right. So, rather bizarrely, that's feedback done and the review done. So what do you think's next, everybody? It's gone very quiet. What do you think is next, everybody? It's time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Okay, the questions this week will be on the Pirate Planet. Fortunately, I already had some questions I found in my file. So, to save me having to read.
And I did not listen.
Here we go. Here we go.
Kirby wins.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I didn't.
Okay, all right, Mary, who do you think is going to be ahead at the after the questions?
Debbie.
Okay, and who do you think is going to be at the in the bottom position?
Me.
Optimism pays every time, doesn't it, Mary? Debbie, who do you think is going to be?
Last time I was on.
Debbie, who do you think is going to be ahead?
Kirby.
Okay, and who do you think is going to be last?
Mary.
And Kirby, who do you think is going to be in the lead?
Debbie.
And who do you think is going to be last?
Do I really have to say it?
Yes, you do. It's part of the game.
Mary's won in the past.
Yeah. I'm just referring to Ian Kirk's...
Only by a fluke. It wasn't because I knew anything.
No, you've won. You've won because you've known before.
Anyway, I'll just refer him, I remember, to Ian Kirk's old feedback when he's Adams. That was a reference to Robert, who always used to shout out Adam. I've actually got some. What?
Go ahead.
Some feedback from Robert about Pirate Planet from many years ago. And he sent that in on the 8th of May. Sorry, the 5th of... Oh, 2011. So it must have been the 8th of May 2011. But there's...
We discussed the Pirate Planet in 2013.
But he begins the message... A piratey hello and a shiver me timbers to Adam, Ben, Alicia, Isabella and Kirby. So that rather does everybody out of it straight away. So, but yeah.
Robert was on our Pirate Planet discussion in 2013.
Yeah, but he wasn't in 2011, which is that he sent that feedback in.
You're saying that was 2011, but our official story for this was number 188 in 2013.
Marvellous, isn't it? Right then, so the current scores are in last place, or joint last place, with minus 2 points, it's Debbie, joint lead with minus 1 point each, it's Mary and Kirby. So, first question goes to Mary, as per usual, as is traditional. Not necessarily in alphabetical order, it's just the order I happen to write people's names down in. And remember, you have jokers. Okay, so Mary, this is the first question. First spoken words of the story were...
I know.
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, okay, I've got to play the appropriate sound. Debbie knows.
Mr. Fibley!
Correct. Okay, right, Debbie, your question.
Yes.
What minerals have been mined, processed, and stored?
Oh, yeah, beryllium, galdrium, and acetonite 455.
Remarkable. You get an extra point notes for getting all three of them.
I did write notes when it came to the minerals. I thought, I'm not going to remember these.
Well, I don't know why, because you can't have known we were going to do a quiz on it.
We usually do.
No, we don't.
Actually, we've been skipping quizzes lately.
Yes.
I know, but he always brings them back.
Occasionally, but most of the time I go for the Trivial Pursuit questions. Right then, Kirby.
Master.
Wealth beyond the dreams of who will be yours, according to the captain?
Well, what?
Wealth beyond the dreams of who will be yours, according to the captain?
I don't know.
Debbie?
It's going to be one of my quotes. Wealth beyond the dreams of avarice will be yours.
Oh.
Oh, that was your question, Kobe, wasn't it? Right, there's 2 points in the bonus pot for this question. Remember, you can play your joker on a bonus pot thingy. And bear in mind,
yes,
Deb's missed out on a couple of questions for playing bonus, but there's only 2 points in it, so I don't know whether you think it's going to be worth it or not. A job well done to the degree of what, according to K9, in regards to the Reboss operation? I'll repeat the question. A job well done to the degree of what, according to K9, in regards to the Reboss operation?
I remember that the doctor put the first segment in a boot.
Okay, no, the answer was 0.16666. So the points stay in the bonus pot. Mary.
Yes.
What subject did Romana prefer to veteran and vintage vehicles as an optional extra at the academy?
I'll play my joker.
Mm?
Life cycle of the Gallifreyan Flutterwing.
Yay!
An appropriate... application of the joker on that instance.
Yes.
Debbie.
Yes.
How does the doctor describe Califrax?
I
know.
Little?
Not enough. Mary?
A cold, wet planet. Icy.
So I'm just fluttering around my keypad here, trying to put appropriate points to people. Right, Kirby.
Master.
How long had the doctor been operating the TARDIS to date?
Joker.
Mm.
523 years.
He loves it when he gets questions like that, right? Doesn't he, everybody?
Don't we all?
Bonus pot, 3 points. Or this question. What does the multi-loop stabilizer do?
Oh, I know that one.
Mm.
Effects a smooth materialization.
So with that bonus pot, the scores are in last place with 3 points, Kirby. In second place with 4 points, Mary. In the lead with 6 points, Debbie. So here's Mary's question.
Sorry, I'm still laughing at Kirby's gasp.
What is the name of Prelix's sister, Mary?
Mula.
I wonder if she likes hoops. Then she'd be a Mula hoop, wouldn't she?
God.
Debbie, yes. What does the Doctor say when Romana says the tracer signal is coming from everywhere?
Oh, Joker, never trust gimmicky
gadgets. Got there in the end, didn't we?
I'm looking at the quotes. I thought it might be appropriate.
Kirby.
Master.
What is one of the precious stones in the galaxy? One of the most precious stones in the galaxy, I'd say. Obviously, it's referenced in this story.
I've already done my Joker, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just simply Ulian.
Is there a more complicated way to say it?
There's no points in the bonus spot. We move straight back to Mary. What sector do the Mentiads head towards?
Well, I've written down Sector 5. Channel 21, Sector 5. I don't know.
Kirby?
Sector 5.
Unfortunately, it says Sector 6 on here. It might have been a misspelling in the thing, so I'm going to give that to Mary as a correct answer.
Yes, give it to...
Because I think what's happened is that I've referenced the subtitles when it's actually, you know. Mary, I'm going to give you that one.
Okay, thank you.
Debbie?
She is correct. So
shut up. Debbie, why does the captain exclaim what the planet's bane is... What's the planet's bane is that? When he first sees K9. Oh, that's the answer, you twonk. Start again. Sorry, I didn't see the question mark there. Right, this is your question. Shut up. Shut up. Right. When did Romano get a present of an air car once?
I know.
When she was 70.
Right, that's better.
I love that.
What a twit. Kirby. Yeah, you too. Kirby, what sweets does the Doctor...
Master?
Oh, for God's sake. What?
I didn't hear my name, and you started asking the question.
Well, if you'd listen, I said it anyway. What sweets does the Doctor throw onto the the captain's air car?
Which one do you want?
The ones that he threw onto the... So that's part of the question. What sweets does the Doctor throw onto the captain's air car?
Well, you know that we.
Well, just answer the blimmin' question, for goodness sake!
Well, if I say the wrong one, you're gonna.
Well, say the right one then!
Well, they end up being all sorts.
Got there in the end, didn't we? Why didn't you just say that in the first place and it saved us all that time? Right. The scores are in last place with 7 points, Kirby in the second place with 8 points, Mary in the lead with 12 points, Debbie. Next question for Mary.
It always happens on the weeks that I don't put myself first.
Mary, what bad news does Mr. Fibberley deliver tentatively to the captain?
That the Macromat field integrator has burned out.
Let me know.
Hey!
I don't know why I wrote that down. That's not the kind of thing I usually write.
Right, Debbie.
Yes.
How does the Doctor outline his occupation to Keymus?
Oh, I know.
We should. He's mostly saves planets.
I'll give you a point for that because it's on the right lines, Kirby.
He saves planets mostly.
Okay, I'll give Debbie the point, and the other one goes into bonus spot. The actual answer is, and I quote: "I save planets mostly, but this time I think I have arrived far, far too late." Okay.
It's not the occupation. He arrives far, far too late. He says he's the planet mostly.
Shut your face. Right, point deducted for disagreeing with me.
Debbie.
What?
You're correct.
I know.
Kirby. I'm giving you a point, for goodness sake. You
took it away.
Got lambasted for giving a point. But it wasn't exactly what was...
You took it away.
Yeah, but then because you disagreed with me. But it says quite clearly here. Anyway, all right then, who's close? Kirby.
Master.
What does... I think there's a word missing here. What does the
dreadful parrot.
Polly.
It says here, this is how I've written it down. What does think the thing Kimus fail to run along is called?
What?
Basically, the question is, what's that? You know, when Kimus tries to run along that sort of thing, what's it called?
Well, the corridor.
Is it your question? Point deducted for Debbie for jumping in when it was Kirby's question.
No, we were trying to get the question right.
I've asked the question in the correct way. That thing that Kimus tries to run, he runs on
it's
the spot.
It's a linear induction corridor.
Thank you, Kirby. You only get a point, though, because unfortunately Debbie had used the word corridor, which was part of the answer in her button.
I knew it anyway.
Oh, well, I thought you did know it anyway. Right then, so that was your question.
It's got the misquote, the I'll never be cruel to an electron particle accelerator again, is from the pilot. No, that's not from that. Yeah, that is from the pilot episode of, no, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Do we really want to lay here listening to you?
Yes, it is. It's when they make the jump. It's when they make the jump.
You're right. You're right.
And then the towel's gone up four spaces or something afterwards.
Well, that's in the TV show.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe you shut up yet.
But that means he did write the Hitchhiker's version first.
God. What was that question for? Was that for Kirby originally? It was 1 point in the bonus pot.
Yes.
What side of the captain's nature does the doctor's manner appeal to?
I know.
Good.
The homicidal side.
Who's asking this question of?
Yes.
Everybody.
It was a bonus pot question. And Kirby got the bonus. I didn't get the bonus when I had to listen to that load of claptrap earlier on. Right then, so in last place with 9 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 10 points, is Mary. And in the lead with 11 points, it's Debbie. Next question goes to Mary.
Is it fair?
Then when I read the answer to that last question, it made me... I had to suppress a chuckle because I do like that line. What side of the captain's nature does the doctor's manner appeal to? Homicidal.
It's only his homicidal side. I like that.
So funny. Right then, Mary.
Yes?
What machinery does the doctor tell the captain is on the blink?
I think I know.
I don't know. That's enough.
Oh, there we go. And we move on to Kirby's answer.
I know. It's the magnifactoid eccentricolometer.
Oh, that'll do.
Sounds like eccentricoglomics.
Yeah, yes, it does.
Right, Debbie.
Yes.
What does the doctor think must be wearing on the nerves of the guards?
I know.
Another one of my favourite lines.
Oh my God, standing around all day looking tough must be very wearing on the nerves.
Love that.
That's another almost exact quote.
Da, 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 da.
Right, Kirby.
Master.
What does the captain exclaim when Fibbley reports that the intruder... Beg your pardon?
Nothing.
I'll start again. What does the captain exclaim when Fibbley reports that the intruders are in the mine shaft? What does the captain exclaim when Fibbley reports that the intruders are in the mine shaft?
You said you'd written all the insults.
Yeah, I was going to say this.
Oh, that's moved to madness.
Yeah.
Why was that so difficult?
Jeez. He was just delaying, that's all.
Right, 1 point in the bonus pot. What is the name of the pirate planet?
I know.
Yes.
I know. Zanak.
Right. Mary. Oh, I won't bother doing the points in this round. Mary.
Yeah.
How does K9 detect the doctor's imminent arrival?
I know.
I know too.
Oh, golly. I remember him talking about that, but I don't know.
And Debbie says she knows.
His distinctive heartbeat.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, Debbie.
Arriving any second.
Debbie. Debbie.
Yes, yes.
How does the doctor describe the Menti ads? No, not like that at all.
Oh, I think I know.
Don't know.
Oh, agree, right. Hang on, just putting this in here. Yeah, I think Kirby said he knows.
I think Mary did.
Hang on, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Telepathic is Stalt.
Was it Mary or Kirby?
Not me.
That was Kirby, right. That's correct. Right, Kirby.
Master.
What was the name of the captain's ship?
Ooh. Did it have a name? Well, I don't remember obviously. It had a name.
I take that as a...
I don't know.
Okay, anybody?
Well, is it Zanuck?
Well, according to my question, so I don't care if you said I've got it wrong. It says Vantarlis. Oh, whatever.
What?
Never mind. You got that one wrong anyway, so not the answer. I'll spell it out. Vantarlis.
Vantarlis.
Yeah, that's it, yes. Okay. Right. 4 points.
Down there with a ship.
4 points in the bonus pot. What does the doctor shout out while regaining consciousness in the captain's brig?
Oh, I know.
Go on in, Mary.
Know.
Mary?
No more Janus thorns.
Right, so the scores are, and this has never happened before on the show at this stage of the game, in first place, Mary, Debbie, Kirby, with 14 points each.
No. Really?
Next question goes to Mary. Mary, what must be at an all-time low, according to the doctor?
I know.
Don't know.
Okay, Kirby says he knows.
Fire rhythms.
Debbie.
Yes.
What do Kumus and Canine go down in the service lift to do?
No.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know. Okay, then we do this. Anybody?
Oh, no.
Good lord. No. First time in this quiz I've actually got one. I'm sorry, that's for me. I was sorry.
We do. You get a point. You go back.
No, I wish. No, the answer is sabotage the engine.
Oh, it's one of my favourite words ever, sabotage. Why did I not remember that?
Okay, who was that question for? Lost in her.
That was me.
Right, Kirby.
Master.
What does the captain call his parrot?
I know.
With that, the short version or the long version?
Oh, just say the blooming answer, for goodness sake.
Polly. I asked you.
No, I said the answer. That's not the answer. Right then, Mary?
Abitron?
Yeah.
Polly plays Abitron.
Yeah, well, you got it right, Debbie, but unfortunately, you can't have a third go at it. So it was Polyphase Avatron, but you all got it wrong. So apart from Debbie, you got it right, but a little bit too late. Right.
Well, you know that I was trying to get from you if you wanted the long version or the short version.
Well, you should have said the long version. It's very unlike you, Kirby, not to actually be pedantic and say the long version. Because if you said the long version and I'd actually said the short version as the answer, I would obviously still have given it to you because the word Polly or the syllable Polly would have been in the answer. Debbie, tell him.
Yeah.
Right, there's 5 points in the bonus pot. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What is the simple theory of the plank as quoted by the captain?
I know.
Yes?
You walk along it. At the end, you fall off and drop 1,000 feet. Dead.
Love it.
That's one of my quotes that I could have used.
Yes. Yeah, I love
that was
quote.
On mine as well. He got it before me.
We should have been listening only down the road, for goodness sake.
I was listening. I was about to open my mouth.
But he's around the other side of the world and he got in ahead of you. I think that's very, very cool.
Oh, for the love of fate.
Okay, not many.
5 hours.
You think that is an excuse? For
All right, the scores
five
are in.
5 hours is only partway round.
Nearly got a point deducted then. And the scores at the moment in last place with 14 points each. It's Debbie and Mary, and then the lead with 20 points is Kirby.
Oh no.
Right, next
that,
question.
That means Debbie's going to win.
Next question goes to Mary. What does the Doctor exclaim when Xanthia talks of living forever?
Baffelgab.
Ooh. Wow.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah, indeed. Debbie.
Just a guess, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Debbie, what does the Doctor say to Romana when the guards chasing them smash against the wall after travelling along the magnificatoid accelerator?
Newton's revenge.
Kirby?
Master?
Yes? What does the Doctor assign Romana to man during dematerialisation?
I don't remember.
All right, you got one. One for me there. Anybody?
Nope.
Assigns to what?
What does the Doctor assign Romana to man during dematerialization?
Oh, no, sorry.
Okay, therefore we get this. Oh, what's up? Oh, my thing's gone funny. There it is. The answer was warp oscilloscope. Okay. 2 points in the bonus pot for this question. What do the Mentiads hit with the spanner? Gone very quiet all of a sudden.
Anything?
Oh, for goodness sake, there's only one question left. You could at least answer it. Anybody there?
I don't know.
A control panel.
No.
Yeah.
Right, I'll start the sentence. See if anybody can fill it in. Right, the.
Is it the astrogravitational whatever?
You're frozen
the
out, Mary.
Neutralizes.
You're
the...
frozen out, Mary. Right. Right, it's the
yes.
Mega Photon
Discharge Link.
There we go. Got there in the end, didn't we?
yeah, we know that, yeah.
Right then,
yeah.
So the current scores, before any other further calculations are taken into consideration, in last place with 16 points each, it's Mary and Debbie. In the lead with 22 points, it's Kirby. So, Mary predicted Debbie to be ahead.
Sorry.
And herself to be at the bottom.
Oh. Right.
Debbie predicted Kirby to be ahead.
Yep.
And Mary to be at the bottom.
Which was true for both.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Recalculating. Kirby predicted Debbie to be ahead. Right here. And Mary to be at the bottom. Right, I think I've got this
right. I just updated the spreadsheet.
Oh, yes. I haven't finished yet.
I know.
I've lost the plot here. Yeah, so Mary predicted Debbie to be ahead. And Mary to be at the bottom. Right, and then Kirby. I've lost. Hang on, right, sorry, I just made a miscalculation. Right then, so final scores are, after me whacking the microphone with my hand there, in last place with 32 points, Mary. In second place with 44 points, Kirby. But the winner
yep.
this week, what? Beg your pardon?
I said, yep. That's what I already wrote down.
Yeah, right, smarty pants. The winner this week with 64 points is Debbie. Right, and we move on.
Well, congratulations, Deb.
Thank you very much.
It's talking as if it hasn't happened for a while. Only because she hasn't been on the show for a while, to be fair.
I've been off one episode.
Yeah.
Speak.
Alan T. Butcher says, avarice is not a person. Okay, the same, that's what he said. Okay, before we move on to the rest of Doctor Who news, yes, there is some stuff that's going on in regards to the convention front, or at least we're trying to attempt to get stuff going on with it, and that is a convention that I'm organising called FanTCCon. It's a Doctor Who of a convention, because that's the Lord of Time part of it, but I don't want to just alienate every other geeky person, because... all us Doctor Who fans like things other than Doctor Who. So I want the focus of it to be Doctor Who, because it's a Doctor Who convention, but I want to just bring in a few other elements to it that we all love, like, for instance, Star Wars.
Yay!
And things like that. So the main focus of it, like I said, will be Doctor Who, and that's what I'll be trying to enhance and make the centre point of the whole thing. The only problem being is CGI-Con... putting on their second and third events this year. So they've already had one in January. They've got one in April and one in July. And I think they've got another one in October. And I don't think they're entirely happy about me putting on this. They're sort of verbally pleased about it and supporting it, but also thinking it's going to clash... a similar event is going to clash with theirs. Now, their event is a gaming sort of based sort of convention. They're very enthusiastic about the gaming side of things, but embracing the cosplay and things like that. It's a very good event, but it's not quite what I'm doing. I'm trying to do a more conventional convention.
If everybody had got together and agreed on just one, you know, like,
well, you can't. That's the trouble. Someone's got to take control, because everybody's got their different ideas of what they want from a convention. Now, having spoken to the chaps at Heroes, who have jumped on the supporting us straight away scenario, is that the idea of a convention is, yes, you want to get a lot of fans together in one place, but at the end of the day, the thing that's going to attract the fans is the having at least one celebrity for them to meet. And I don't think... the gaming side of it is interesting. They want to get together and promote and enjoy the gaming side of it, you know, in front of people and in front of an audience, maybe. It also have things like bouncy castles and things to do, which is great. You know, it's a lovely day out event to go to for people to get together. My one is more of a traditional thing. I haven't got the backing, because unfortunately for me, the CGI guys, there's four of them, and they've got a lot of financial backing, so they can virtually do what they want. If they really wanted to get a celebrity in, they could do so, but that's not what their sort of conventioning is all about. My problem is I haven't got the financial backing at all, and the only way we're going to get what we want out of it is by people buying tickets and coming to the event. So we've got enough money in the pot, we'll then start booking guests. So obviously if we get like only a handful of people wanting to come to it, there won't be enough money in the pot for guests. Well, there will be enough money in the pot to actually run the event, but it'll just be a sort of a get together and, you know, play games, face painting,
contribute
panels, blah, blah, blah. I beg your pardon?
I said I'll happily contribute some towards a guest if you want.
Do you know how much it costs, say, for instance, to get even the cheapest guest on the list?
Well, if I can help, I will.
I know, but unfortunately, they want paying up front. And I'll give you an example of the cheapest guest that we might say, oh, that you'd be quite good to get. It would be £800 plus travel and putting up on the bank holiday weekend.
Right, I'd better sell some stuff on eBay then.
God. So yeah, so that, but it is doable if we get obviously support of people wanting to come to the event. The event's on the 24th and 25th of August at Cowes Enterprise College. It's not that expensive. The tickets are available if you go to Everbrite. They're Everbrite. Eventbrite. What's the Everbrite for? It sounds like a blooming electrical supply company. Eventbrite. Yes, go to Eventbrite. the initial early bird tickets are very cheap. I thought I'd put some early bird ones up. Only a few, there's not many. I didn't want to sort of put myself off the, you know, off the radar. But there's some really cheap weekend tickets there at the moment, which I think are they're £15, where they're normally £25. So that's for an adult, and the children's ones are even cheaper. So if you want to get your cheapy tickets now, that finishes at the end of this month, and then the general admission tickets prices go in at 9 a.m. on the 1st of March. So all the other tickets are... there will be some other ones added, you know, if we can get some guests in, maybe some sort of more sort of guest encompassing tickets, photo shoot tickets and stuff like that being added if we can get enough money in the pot. But like I said, we'll only get that money in the pot if people support the event and come to it and enjoy themselves. It will be fun. I've had some lovely support, like I say, from the guys in Heroes. We've got Jo Lofthouse and her company who are going to do the face painting. We've had the party shop in Shanklin, Denise Robertson, who's going to come along and do her popcorn machine and do balloons for us. And
how about one.co.uk?
I've sent an email to them. They haven't replied yet, but they would obviously be in the hall where the Doctor Who convention part of it is, which I plan to put in the dance
studio.
We're not
going to have the guys that sell the pop vinyls and take up all our space, are we?
No, well, Heroes sell pop vinyls, but I don't want every single vendor selling pop vinyls. But then I don't want to say...
That was irritating more than anything else.
I don't want to just have no vendors there. So if we end up with lots of vendors selling pop vinyls, if they've paid their pitch fees, they've got nothing to complain about when it comes to selling pop vinyls. They need to be a bit more imaginative in what they sell. Yes.
I'm confused by the convention name change.
It's still the Doctor Who part of it is called Lord of Time. It's still there, but the convention is called Fantasy Con.
Okay, where's TC?
The Doctor Who is a fantasy is a science fiction fantasy TV show.
Okay, to play on words. Go on.
We're fans.
Does the TC stand for something?
Trade and Comic. We're fans. Oh. Trade and Comic. Fans of trades and comic and fantasy stuff. It's all encompassing the same thing.
I've just call me Dense.
Well, I thought it was fairly obvious. TC, trade and comic.
You were called Kirby.
So yes, that's what aiming to do, so there's a bit of work to do with it, and it's certainly it needs the word spreading and people to buy tickets for it. And the good thing about Eventbrite is that they pay out before the end of the event. So if we can get some money in the pot, then I can book someone. Enough money, I should say, in the pot. So we'll keep on. Obviously, it could get cancelled if we don't sell any tickets. So, like I say, support, keep it on. No support,
hopefully
get cancelled.
So this was something that was going to occur anyway, and you've helped with it, or what?
No, this is my event.
This is Adam's event.
But okay. CGIcon don't want it to happen because it they think it's going to sort of be a competition event to theirs in a way.
So.
But
I
don't
think
it's a completely different type genre of convention.
Is it the same weekend?
I did suggest to them that they have a room and do
you
some
get
gaming.
Involved and have a gaming area.
Yeah, no, that's what I've suggested to them. Yeah. That what they could have is that they could have a room, do gaming, and also promote their events.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
See, it's that, or I just bring all my consoles up and we just set somewhere up and have
that could be awkward.
Play.
So yeah, so that's it's just I need vendors, I need punters, and once we've got vendors and punters, it'll all start taking shape. But obviously, I can't do the whole thing on my own because I've got a very busy summer of weddings coming up. And actually, the week of the convention, we're planning to go on holiday at Thorness doing a bit of camping. So, but I'm hoping everything will be in place before that last week and the con.
Well,
but,
I'm here, so make use. I'm around. I only work 25 hours a week, and the rest of it I spend writing, so make use of
good.
It.
Well, early stages at the moment, but like I say, just need people to talk about it and spread the word. And
So what you're saying is with all of your busy projects over the summer, we're not going to be doing much of the podcast, huh?
Well, that'll still be happening.
I don't think a 7 to 9 p.m. on a Sunday evening is going to have a major impact on me organising the event. I just want people to... I need to do it anyway. I need to talk about it on the show, and I'm going to have to do what Alex does and do a few Facebook lives on the page on Facebook. I have got a website. I'm just trying to for the con. I have actually got a website. I'm just trying to tweet with it and get things on it. It's if you go to fantcon.net. That's fantcon.net. Then there is a website. It's not much on it at the moment because it's in construction. But it is there. The best place to go to is on Facebook and just join the. And come over from America if you like. That'd be quite nice. We do have people that travel to conventions in Great Britain from America. But yeah, it's. So even if we just get the one guest, that would be fine. So if we get some lucrative. I did have the, we did have the crowdfunding, which failed. I think we did get a couple of people contribute some money, very kind of them, but that's all that happened. The first time I put it up there, we had two people contribute a load of money towards it, and it completely stopped. Maybe I just aimed the price too high. I'm still possibly looking down the crowdfunding route for something else, but not for the convention. That obviously wasn't going to work. But yeah, so keep talking about it. I will change the icon at the top of the page to incorporate the logo. It's interesting to note all the viewers have gone since I started talking about this. But there you go. Right, let's move on to other Doctor Who news. All right, there we've got Lethbridge Stewart, Rise of Dominator, more books about the Brig, if you'd like the Brig. We've got the Doctor Who virtual reality special. Doctor Who fans will soon be able to step inside a virtual reality version of the TARDIS in a short VR film, Doctor Who: The Runaway.
Coming. I'm hoping that they put that out for the Google VR visor, because I've got one of those.
Cool. It's coming soon from the BBC. Jodie Whittaker reprises her role as the Doctor in an animated form in the interactive story, which will run for around 12 minutes and will be available on selected VR headsets for the coming months. The film will feature music from the series composer Segun Akinola. Viewers will join the 13th Doctor on board the TARDIS in this animated interactive story. They just said that. What is it twice for? Donuts. Rosa wins Visionary Arts Award. Now, we had that last time, so that tells me we've had actually in the last 2 weeks no Doctor Who news whatsoever. There has been some awards which we didn't win again, but the BAFTAs were on last Sunday, in fact, and so that means the BAFTA Television Awards will be on soon. So keep us fingers crossed. Got more chance of winning a BAFTA Television Award than we have winning the National Television Award. There you go. That's Doctor Who news. Lavazzi did have an offer out. I got an email from Lavazzi. Let's see what they say about. They had a lovely email from our good friends at Lavazzi. Here it is. Yay. Beg your pardon.
I said yay.
It's an exclusive.
I love Lavazzi.
Exclusive discount for Doctor Who fan club members only. So if you're a member of the Lavazzi Doctor Who fan club, you get 10% on any Doctor Who product. And it's until Sunday the 17th of February, which is today. So only the people that aren't watching the live feed. It's quite funny.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, the code is WHO10. So sorry about that, everybody. And sorry about that, Lavazzi. It just so happens you posted that right in between shows. So that's Lavazzi. If you is anybody watching? No. Nobody watching at all. Thank you. Being mean to me this week, they are. Right then. So let's have a look at... who's the other stuff? Oh, yeah, Who Won, isn't it? Because I did...
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Email them. They never replied. I do hope they do. I did give off them half price on the pitch and for them to have it in a prime Doctor Who area. Right then. So, coming soon. Oh, lots of big Finnish stuff coming up. Black Thursday and Power Games, a fifth Doctor story. Devil in the Mist, another fifth Doctor story. Diary of River Song 5. First Doctor Adventures 3. Obviously, David Bradley. So there's a few bits and bobs.
Yeah, Big Finnish is putting out a lot of content over the course of this year, because this is their big 20th anniversary year.
I can't believe that's been 20 years. And, of course, the Macra Terror is coming out on DVD in animated form. And that's available for pre-order at whoone.co.uk. Also, Doctor Who Magazine 535. Elysian Blade. It's a second Doctor story. And Cricket Men. It's a book. And Sunmakers, which is an audio CD. So all those items available from whoone.co.uk. So next week we'll be looking at...
I thought we weren't having a podcast next week.
Shall I rephrase the way I said that, Mary? Okay. Week after next.
You mean next time?
Yeah, that was a lovely way of putting it.
Wait, why aren't we having one next
week? I have a photo shoot in the evening.
He's a busy man.
Pardon?
On the 3rd.
Yeah, please let me finish.
Aye.
On the 24th, I have a photo shoot at Medina Theatre with one branch of Spotlight, not Spotlight, Starlight Express. No, hang on, Starlight Boutique. Get it right. Yeah, got one branch of Starlight Boutique have their show at Medina Theatre, and I'm there for the rehearsal. Oh no, to shoot the show, photograph it, and then the following week, another event has to be done there. So. And I'm photographing that, the other branch of Starlight Boutique. So I'll have two photography jobs, a theatre photography jobs to do in consecutive weeks. So that means, unless we record on a Monday morning,
oh, that was quick.
We have to wait till the 10th of March. Everybody's gone very quiet.
You used to be up for Monday morning recordings.
I mean, I could do it if other people wanted to do it.
Yeah. So who would be,
for others to, right, to
who would be available? Here's a question. Who would be available on Monday the 25th of February to do a recording on the next Doctor Who story, at the title of which eludes me for the moment?
Well, I happen to be on holiday all day that day.
Right,
yeah,
so
that's, and I'm not working that day.
That's two.
Available.
That's two all of them. Right, there we go then. So we'll put it in there. I'll put it on my calendar. So
you won't have anybody watching.
No, we might have some people watching, maybe in Australia. Yeah,
Adam, I can actually come to yours if you like.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
that
so actually, Monday the 25th.
Monday the 25th at 10 a.m., which is, I say 10 because if I do it at 9, I've got to leave to move Debbie from one place to another. But I can do it at 9 if you so wish. What time would suit you?
9 would be
not at 9. No, that means we're doing it at 4 in the morning.
All right, I'm just asking. So there we go. It'll be 10 a.m.
I'm going to get back from dropping Isla off as well.
Yeah, the only thing is that I'm no longer as available for as long. On Monday morning, so I can only give you an hour and a half.
Some people would say that's a bonus.
Yeah, I was going to say, yay!
Okay. So that gives us about 8 days to watch the next Doctor Who story on the list, the title of which eludes me.
Stones of Blood.
The Stones of Blood. There's a magnificent old actress in that story, isn't there, which I remember Tom Baker got on particularly well with. So there's a bit of chemistry going on between Tom and one of the actors in the story, which is really quite charming.
And since we've done it before, does that mean we're going to have a quiz?
I don't know. I don't know if I've got any quiz questions on that one, so we'll have to wait and see.
The 25th at
10.
Okay, at 10. Fine.
And we still haven't got any viewers, so thanks, everyone. Just because I start talking about a very important event on the Isle of Wight and you lot go away. Right, so if you want to come and join us live, that's the date to come. It's GMT, and it's still GMT at the moment, 10 a.m., 25th of February 2019. But until then, thank you for persevering with some of the show at least, and see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
Thank you. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.